in real life, we're kind of, it's hard for us to stay focused. Like on one thing, we're kind of, ADHD. I don't want to say that, as a
disclaimer, we're not ADHD diagnosed.
Not ADHD. We are.
No diagnosis, no diagnosis, no medication.
Definitely. If the FAA is watching, we have not been diagnosed with ADHD. We are very focused. We are very happy people. No depression. it's all good.
Yes, exactly. Oh, is this thing on?
I see you.
I'm Steve Giordano.
I'm Bob Allen.
And this is Cockpit Casual, the podcast.
All right.
Yeah. Can we not talk on top of each other?
Well, we always do. So, why not here? I mean, this is our normal conversation.
Yeah. We've talked about it, doing it for a long time. And here we are. We just kept kicking the can down the road and we finally picked up the can. So this is Cockpit Casual, the podcast. And we're going to talk about all kinds of different stuff. It's the Bob Steve dynamic on full display.
Yeah, not just in the cockpit anymore.
Actually, not in the cockpit much.
Yeah, it feels like. Not in the last year we haven't been. So we'll talk about that later.
Exactly. So here's the rundown. This is going to be a weekly structured podcast under the banner of Cockpit Casual. It's going to be broadcast to all the places that podcasts are brought. Broadcast to Spotify and Apple Music. And I guess there's more of them. I only use those two. Actually, I only use Apple Music.
Yeah.
Do you know of other ones?
I don't know. Not really. I mostly use Spotify.
Yeah. Anyway, it's also going to be uploaded to YouTube. And I highly recommend going to the Cockpit Casual YouTube channel, especially if something that we say or talk about piques your interest, because there's a video companion that's not just going to be our floating heads. There's going to be a lot of floating heads, but there's going to be, we're going to talk about some stuff. I'm going to put some clips up from footage, cutting room floor footage from Cockpit Casual episodes, or footage of other stuff. It's going to be a worthy watch, I believe.
Hopefully an entertaining watch. I mean, especially the clips that make it to the floor. Those are usually the ones that are some of the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have to non-G rate them, but, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. That's usually the problem. There's things that, that are not G rated that come out of our mouths sometimes.
Right. Exactly. So odds are, if you're watching, you know who Captain Bob is, Bob Allen. Bob Allen is a jack of all aviation media. People know him as Captain Bob. I don't call him that. I just call him Bob.
Yeah. Not too many people. Well, anybody that watches my social media, like if I'm in, if they recognize me in public, they always say Captain Bob, and I don't realize who they're talking to usually.
Does your wife Laura call you Captain Bob?
Of course, she's always called me Captain Bob.
I thought so. So here's what we are. We're ferry pilots, okay? I mean, we're not like broadcasters. I mean, I would say that I'm an amateur video editor. I create the Cockpit Casual. It's like a cinematic series on YouTube and, it's episodic and you could tune in to about 6 to 8 episodes a year, roughly. I usually upload them in batches. This podcast is going to be uploaded to that channel weekly. So you can tune in and catch up with us every week. It's not going to be the end of the cinematic stuff. The Cockpit Casuals are going to continue. So don't worry about that. If you don't like looking at our floating heads, just tune in for Cockpit Casual. I'm fine.
Just wait months on end for new episodes.
Right. Exactly. So, it's because this is the first episode ever. We're going to do like a little bit of an intro. Okay. We're going to refer people back to episode one if they want to know who we are. And so that's kind of the underlying point of this episode. And later on in the episode, we're going to take a deep dive into what the ferry business is, what ferry piloting really, really is. But I'll start off by giving you an intro. My name's Steve Giordano. I live in the Philadelphia area, if you can't tell by my accent, South Jersey particularly. I was an airline pilot for a number of years. I worked for a few different airlines, the regionals, a couple of larger low-cost carriers, Allegiant for a long time. As you can see by some of these photos in the back, cut my teeth on the MD-80. It was my first jet. Dash 8 was my first turboprop. I maintain 12 type ratings. Well, I have 12 type ratings. I guess I probably maintain about 8. 737, 757, 767, 777, 78, A320, A330, A340, DC-9 / MD-80, Dash 8. Am I missing some? Yeah, Citation, Westwind. I got a bunch of type ratings and fly a lot of different airplanes. And as a ferry pilot, I deliver them around the world. And I've been filming these adventures for a number of years now, 5 years now, and producing Cockpit Casual. And I'm also on social media. And, you know, we get a lot of people that are engaged and want to know about not just our business, but our takes on aviation in general. They love the whole Bob-Steve dynamic. And here we are. Bob, why don't you tell the world what you are and who you are.
Yeah, and I think you're doing yourself a little bit of a disservice by saying you're an amateur editor and producer. I think you've come a long way with the Cockpit Casual, as I'm sure most people would agree that's seen it. If you haven't seen Cockpit Casual yet and you're listening to this, go see it. It's great stuff. With that said, I'm Bob Allen. Most of you guys know me as Captain Bob if you follow my social media. Maybe even Captain Bedbug. That's a whole nother story that started on TikTok about 5-6 years ago. I don't know. Maybe we'll tell the story one of these days.
Yeah.
I've got a large social media following on pretty much all the platforms, mostly under the handle Captain Bob _ Nomadic is where you'll find most of my legitimate stuff. There's a whole lot of illegitimate scammers out there who claim to be me, trying to get people into crypto scams and everything else. But
they should pay you a commission.
For real. I mean, I don't know how much money I've made for scammers out there, but I hope none. I hope zero. That stuff really pisses me off. But yeah, I've been, you know, I was one of these guys that started out at, 16 years old flying, wanted to fly my whole life, got into an airline career very early, all through my 20s. I was an airline pilot into my 30s. I'd been through, I don't know, maybe 10, 11 airlines. Every airline that I was ever with went out of business. So I got tired of being out of a job. And got very good at marketing myself, finding new jobs, got into the airline startup world and discovered ferry flying from that because the banks and leasing companies would call me to repossess my own airplanes. So
that's a story we're going to have to cover at some point. I mean, that's a golden one, actually. It's hilarious.
Yeah. It's, I started my own business kind of from that, you know, 25, 26 years ago, met Steve kind of, not too far after that. And, we've been good friends ever since,
'04
business together. '04. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We still look as young as we did back then.
this is the point where I put the pictures up of us back then. Right. I have a lot of them.
Now, we've had some great adventures doing what we do. But, we kind of share, very similar type ratings. We're kind of type rated on a lot of the same stuff. So we've flown together for, together many years. I think the only one that you don't have that I do is the 727, I think.
Yeah, correct. I'm not that old. I look it, but I'm not that old.
Right. Well, you're old enough to have a DC-9 / MD-80, so.
That's because I worked for a lower grade airline.
Yeah, but that's that's it. I mean, we'll talk more about our careers and the details of that. There's some interesting crazy stories definitely intertwined within that.
We might have to start a segment at some point just dedicated to crazy stories. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I think it's actually a good idea, but That also might get us in trouble.
We have to find out we'll have to call our attorney, get the statute of limitations.
Yeah. So we'll handle that in the background. And then if it's deemed that we can't get in trouble for those things, then perhaps they will make it to the airwaves at some point. So anyway, why are we doing a pod? Well, you know, look, I used to be very, very active on like Twitter and X. I'm still somewhat active on it, Instagram, stuff like that. And you know, I'm not just like a post and forget it guy. Like, I mean, I'll go right down in the mud with you, you know, and I do it happily, and it's fun, and you know, no harm, no foul. So
it's entertaining to all of us when you go down into that mud.
Yes, I know. It's especially, it creates some interesting conversations in the house here too. But, you know, I think the bottom line is that we have a lot to, you know, we have a great dynamic. Now, first of all, I mean, I don't have that many friends. I've got a bunch, but I mean, Bob, you're probably like one of my oldest friends at this point that, you know, we talk every day.
Yeah.
We have these conversations anyway, so we may as well film them.
Yeah, exactly. This is exactly how our conversations go. Every day when we're talking about, we start talking about business and it just kind of goes off into a tangent somewhere else.
There have been some serious, like, laughing to the point of crying on many a phone call, but like, really, at the end of the day, like, what is there a better way to interact with everybody, you know, and it's going to be two way. And I'll get into that later. Cause we want to take questions and have guests and, you know, and stuff like that too. But, I think this is a better medium rather than tweeting something and then maybe deleting it an hour later. I've never done that, but, you know,
we'll have to start deleting whole podcasts.
Yeah. No kidding. And then of course, like there's a ton of interest in more cockpit casuals and I'm making them as fast as I can. They take a long time to make and ultimately, you know, if you want to interact with us more often than waiting, you know, couple times a year for a drop of episodes, this is your outlet to do so. And so I want to keep it structured and formatted. And Bob and I have worked on this. And look, we're going to talk about real-time industry stuff as it happens, right? If there's news, we're going to give you our take on it. And maybe it'll be a great take or maybe it'll be asinine, but that's all in the entertainment value of it. And we do fun stuff. Like we travel the world every week. It seems like it's a different city, not so much lately, but it's to come again. And we go, you know, we see things that are interesting. We talk about it. We get it captured on video and not everything makes it to the internet via Cockpit Casual or Bob's TikTok. And this podcast is going to give us an opportunity every week to bring these things to light and put them in front of you. So you'll get some more interaction and not lose the interaction that you already have. So
yeah,
that's why exactly. We're doing it.
Yeah. You know, we want it to be interactive. So, you know, we're going to give you a way to ask us questions and that type of stuff so that we can talk about it on the podcast and may even show your comment.
And look, the hardest thing, we're such ramblers, like this is going to get better just like Cockpit Casual did. So I'm just going to put that disclaimer out there. It's going to get better as we get used to it. I've done a bunch of pods as a guest, but you know, this is our first time really doing it. So one thing that I want to do is I want to keep the format on track every week. You're going to have like the same type of like, you know, things, the same segments each time, right? Like we're going to have an opener segment where we talk about the, you know, what's going on in our world, what's going on in the world as it relates to aviation. And you know, in the industry and we're going to kind of riff on that, every single time on the opening segment. This one is not really the opening segment. This is like the pre-opening segment. And then we have a segment later on that's called Side Shtick. I came up with that. I think it's pretty good, right? It's like a lightning round. 5 minutes. We're going to pick one topic, funny, absurd, something. We're just going to talk about it. When the alarm goes off, then we're done talking about it. And you get what you get. We'll see what happens. That's not going to be edited unless we say something really bad.
Which is a very good possibility. But, yeah, we'll see what happens there. I mean, you know, we're in real life, we're kind of, it's hard for us to stay focused. Like on one thing, we're kind of, ADHD. I don't want to say that, as a
disability, we're not ADHD diagnosed.
Not ADHD. We are.
No diagnosis, no medication.
Definitely. If the FAA is watching, we have not been diagnosed with ADHD. We are very focused. We are very happy people. No depression. it's all good.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And so side shtick will be interesting. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, it's a double entendre that you'll have to figure out on your own. If you don't know what a side stick is, you probably aren't listening to this podcast anyway. Every week, then we'll go into a main segment. Sometimes we'll deep dive on a topic. This week, we're going to deep dive into the ferry industry, our business, and we're going to put it all out there as much as we possibly can. And I imagine that's kind of somewhat going to be a recurring theme over the course of this podcast into eternity. But we're going to basically get the big hurdles cleared today. Also, when we don't deep dive on a subject, we're going to end up having guests. And I have so many fascinating people that I want to bring in and introduce to you guys.
I can't wait for that. I mean, we got some really, really good people that we know. I mean, some great entertaining people that have done some really cool stuff that we're going to have on here.
In aviation, in our world, like people that work on the technical part, the leasing part of this industry that we're on the operations side of. And then, of course, people that I've met through social media over the years, CEOs, entrepreneurs. I know a bunch of people in Hollywood, and I'm going to try to get some of them. So anyway, that's going to be the main segment. And then we're going to do a Q&A before we close things out every week. And I just, we'll get into that later because we're going to start it out with just the common questions this week. But we're going to open up an email box. It's going to be pod@nomadic.aero, pod@nomadic.aero, pod@nomadic.aero. And we encourage our listeners to submit either a video question or an audio question. I guess you could type it, but we're going to pick video and audio first, and then we're going to play your question, and then we're going to answer it. And we're going to do that at the kind of the late midpoint end of every episode before we close it out. So anyway, without further ado, let's jump into the main segment here. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So the opening segment is going to talk about what's going on in our world. And the reality is, the last, 6 months or so has been very strangely quiet in our world. We're working. There are trips, few and far between. During busy times, we're flying, as a company, 5 to 7 trips a week. Right now we're doing 2 to 3 a month. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And it's super annoying, but let's talk about them a little bit.
Yeah, it's very annoying. It's probably, 26 years of doing this, it's probably, 2025 and now 2026 is the slowest time I've seen in this entire business.
Yeah. I mean, it's been this slow, but normally for 6 months, and then there'll be something there'll be a bunch of stuff. And I think that it's kind of been the perfect storm this time. There's a lot of stuff that kind of happened at one time that really has led to this stagnation in the industry. And I don't necessarily know that you can feel it in the airline industry yet, or as a passenger, or even that you will or won't. It's very noticeable for us and our counterparts and other parts of the behind the scenes industry, tech reps.
I mean, most people would never see, the part of aviation that we see. We are a very small niche area of it in the finance side of it, and the technical side of it is it's an area that most people in aviation never see.
Yeah. So when we, when we talk to our contacts at the leasing companies or in the maintenance side of things, they all are telling the same story. They're all singing the same tune. Everyone's dead. Tech rep business is dead, and everybody expects it to pick up fourth quarter this year and into next year. And so let's talk a little bit about why, because I think it's really interesting. The first thing first and foremost is our business thrives. And I said this in the last Cockpit Casual, it thrives on the ramps. It thrives when things are changing in the aviation industry. So when the airlines are strong and they're adding airplanes and they're cycling out old ones and bringing in new ones, we're gangbusters. And when the airlines are crashing, when fuel prices are high, and when the airlines are struggling financially, they're parking planes, they're terminating leases early, we're slammed, we're busy. So ramping up, ramping down, we're busy. Like, we're ferrying airplanes around the world, we're flight testing, we're doing all that stuff. Anytime it's stagnant, you know, that's generally when it's slower. Like, COVID was crazy. Like, I mean,
we're crazy busy. It was crazy, a tidal busy wave of business.
And that's a whole other story, because it really kind of changed the way that we did a lot of things. But right now, the reason volume is down is multifold, right? Number one, I think probably first and foremost, is the Pratt & Whitney GTF thing, right? Like, that's so huge. Yeah. Why don't you talk about the GTF issue, Bob?
Yeah, so Pratt & Whitney with the A320 and 321neos, those engines started having issues. I don't know what the issue, I think, was a delamination of some of the fan blades, maybe some of the internal ones. Those GTF engines are, they started using composite blades coated with, like, I don't know, some kind of titanium alloy or coating or something. That started delaminating off of the composite and causing major engine problems. So a lot of those engines, I don't know, I can't remember what the percentage was.
Yeah, it's a fair bit. And also keep in mind, there are two different engines available on the Neo. So there's the CFM Leap and the Pratt & Whitney GTF, which stands for geared turbofan, right? So, like, the GTF uses a whole different technology. It essentially is like a transmission that goes from, like, the power section to translating to the fan, right? So the engine burns at a speed and the fan doesn't turn at the exact same speed. It produces additional thrust that way. Whereas the Leap, the philosophy is that it's a more traditional engine, but they use different types of materials so that they can burn at, like, hotter temperatures, faster speeds. It's a different philosophy.
Yeah. And the whole purpose of both of those engines is fuel efficiency. I mean, it made it, I think upwards of 20% more fuel efficient than the older A320, 321 CEOs, these older aircraft, with the older engines. The older engines were just, they're more reliable, but they were less fuel efficient. So, you know, these engines will get past all of that. But the problem is, and the whole problem we're discussing, the cause of that, is these engines have to come off wing, and it's taking, I think it's almost a year process to take it off wing, get it to the factory, have them basically rebuild it with good components,
or inspect it. I think inspecting it is a big part of it.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's not, I just checked, I'm trying to get the number of how many, it's hundreds. I can't find an exact number offhand. I probably should have planned that in advance, but it is like a powder metal process, and it's not actually the fan, it's the turbine. Yeah. What's basically happened is that this issue has grounded a bunch of airplanes and forced the airlines that are operating them to fall back and rely on their other aircraft that are not affected, which means extending leases on the older aircraft, right? So when leases are getting extended, new airplanes aren't coming in, old airplanes aren't coming out, that's our bread and butter. Like, we bring the new airplanes in and take the old airplanes out. So that's huge. And that happened at the same time that Boeing has slowed manufacturing. And I'm not going to go into the weeds with why, but if you follow aviation news, you know that there's been a lot of, you know, both manufacturing, regulatory compliance, there's all kinds of issues at Boeing that have caused the production of 737s to stagnate over the last couple of years. And so they're not making as many airplanes. So that's been big. Airbus has bottlenecked a little bit too, as they've expanded to some different final assembly lines. They've got one in, you know, they've got the Germany, the Hamburg, and the Toulouse, France, and, you know, now they have Was it Alabama Mobile?
Yeah, Mobile, yeah. Alabama.
And they have one in China now too. So like, you know, they're ramping up production. Everybody's ramping up production, but it's not there yet. And then the tariff uncertainty, like I'm not going to deep dive into that, but like I will just say the questions that remain with tariffs are more than the answers that exist.
So, yeah, there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of risk out there for these companies to invest a lot of money in used airplanes and part outs and all of this stuff. It just has created a lot of uncertainty along with these engine problems, and it's slowed down our industry massively.
Yeah, and there was also, and like the final thing is we do a lot of cargo conversion operations, right? Like we bring airplanes into the facilities to go from passenger aircraft to freighter. I mean, we do a lot. Historically, we've done a ton of those. I mean, I'd almost say probably close to 50% of our ops have had something to do with, you know, over the last 10 years. That was going gangbusters, especially during COVID and the immediate aftermath and before COVID with the narrow body freighters. So they pushed a lot of supply into the cargo market, and then the cargo airlines did not have the demand to necessarily keep up with the amount of supply coming out. So cargo conversion is down. There's a lot of people waiting for the 777-300 passenger to freighter conversion to be certified and produced at scale. And so people are kind of holding off. There's no real reason to convert a 76 if we know the triple's coming down the pipe. And you know, the A330 is available, cargo conversion. We actually are still doing quite a bit of those A330 conversions. They're doing them in Turkey and China. Where else?
Yeah. Germany. Yeah, in Dresden, Germany. Yeah, that's kind of, that's the A330 conversion program has kind of been our, it's what's kept our lights on over the last year.
Yeah, and the 321 conversion a little bit beforehand, although that's slowed. It does seem like there's been kind of a shift away from narrow body freighters. I don't know if it's just oversupply, but they're not making as many as they were. The 321 conversion is a really cool machine, there's just not too many out there. And so I guess the jury's out on whether they'll keep making those 737-800 conversion freighters they're almost a thing of the past at this point. I'm not exactly sure why they weren't successful, but they haven't been as successful as they had hoped. And there's just not many of them getting converted anymore.
Yeah. So, you know, as you can see, I mean, that's what all of these dynamics affect us greatly. And so we are in a unique position. We kind of have our fingers on the pulse of kind of what's going on out there between the manufacturers, between the lessors, between, you know, the whole dynamic kind of crosses, you know, where we live.
So anyway, that's why we're slow. Everybody says things are going to come back. Like kind of the experts are saying, the leases that were extended are going to start expiring around the fourth quarter of this year, maybe third into next year. And 2027 is supposed to be gangbusters. So any of you folks out there wanting a contract for us, probably look towards 2027 before we start having to kind of ramp up our contract crews. Our little team of in-house guys for now, we have it managed, but anyway.
Yeah. I get a lot of guys. I think they think I'm mad at them or something because they're wanting to fly for us. But there's just nothing going on, you know, and it's just, it's not,
we got to stay current ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. We're pretty much flying everything that's flying just to put food on our own table right now.
So so I'm recently back to flying. So I flew, my last trip of 2025 at the end of November with you. We pulled a 330 freighter out of China and we brought it to Fort Worth, Texas for paint. And then immediately after that, I had shoulder surgery, my left shoulder. I'm doing well. I'm like pretty mobile. Hello. Pretty mobile now. I'm going to physical therapy twice a week and I'm getting better. I hope to be golfing again by spring. But I took a month and a half off after that. Bob flew a few trips, but we were quiet. And then I returned to work, I guess about three weeks ago now, again with Bob, back in China again. And we took a 730, or no, it was an A320.
It was A320 this time out of there.
Yeah. And we took it out of China and we flew it to, Arizona.
Yeah.
Tucson.
Tucson.
So I bookended my medical leave with two China trips. And, you know, that was cool. I mean, we went in and out of China a lot.
Yeah, we've been. Yeah. I mean, we've probably
it's a busy
been
market.
Out of China the last more out of in and out of China than anywhere the last year.
How do you feel about operating in and out of China, Bob?
You know, it's one of those things that used to be very frustrating. It was difficult to deal with the bureaucracy of it. There's just, you know, I spent 5 years in Asia. You know, I lived in Taiwan for 5 years. So I kind of know how people think in Asia, not in a bad way, but in a different way. I mean, when you have rules, they're set, and there's, especially in China, there's no flexibility on that where,
yeah.
Here I'm used to a world where, yeah, there's rules, but you know, everything's fluid and flexible. Yeah. There you have to abide by, if there's, you know, if it takes 3 days to have something approved, you're going to wait 3 days. There's no getting around it. That was very frustrating for me initially. But over the years, you know, I've kind of accepted the way you do business there and everything else, you know, all of the customer expectations we set based on what's reality there, not what somebody wants to hear. So
yeah, and it's gotten easier over the years because we've made contacts in China, and like we've got a handler that we use every time, like that kind of essentially almost works for us, you know, to deal with that red tape and bureaucracy. You need a local over there.
Yeah, and it's become a process. You know, it's become a defined process of exactly what we need to do when. And it was just frustrating getting to that point to actually learn what process do we need to set up to make this work here. And then after that was done, it's actually very easy now. I don't really have any frustration with it at all. It actually works kind of like right on time. It's very efficient now.
Well, what about food? Like, that's where I'm trying to steer this conversation. For the YouTube audience, you're about to get blessed with some clips. And if you're listening, then you might want to tune in and take a look, because getting food, like not only eating there, I mean, first of all, Chinese food ain't Chinese food that we know, like American Chinese food. And there's some great stuff. Like, don't get me wrong, I love a Peking duck in Beijing. I mean, it's awesome, right? There's some good stuff out there. But there's some scary looking food, especially for us Westerners. And getting catering out of China is always like a mystery. Like, I don't know what it's like roulette, I guess.
I guess. I mean, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I mean, you know, it seems like we're always hitting a 7-Eleven, honestly.
We had an airplane to...
Wrong one, wrong clip.
Talk about 7-Eleven, there we are.
Right? So I'm running a clip in 7-Eleven. This is like the jerky aisle. And it's not like beef jerky. Like, what's that? It's like duck tongue. That's like a
foot.
That is like a claw, like a talon.
Yeah.
I didn't buy that.
Something.
You got like spiny boneless duck claw snack.
So I didn't even know they had claws. But yeah.
We didn't buy any of this stuff though.
I don't think we did. I mean, this is not the stuff to try right before you go on a, you know, 15-hour flight.
Right. Like they have a decent roller, like just like in the US they have rollers, right? But their 7-Eleven more has like flesh colored sausages.
Little balls and like, or something.
And yeah, I mean there are balls and like tan balls and flesh colored sausages on the screen right now, like which we didn't try.
No. Sort of a hot sausage. Yeah. And then there's always something in a pot full of dark oil. I don't know. Yeah, that look on my face right there. This must not have been appetizing whatever I'm looking at.
That's M&M's, man. That's you with your M&M's. It's a very small pack.
Chocolate.
But you need an M&M of some sort, don't you?
I think I got
bag, yes.
Yeah, I've got a big bag of M&M's in my bag.
Yeah, so yeah, I already got some.
You had to get your M&Ms. So yeah, I mean, it turns out essentially most of our catering, even if we order sandwiches and all that stuff, but like we hardly ever turn to it. Like we don't usually need to. On these long flights, we can generally make things happen with the snacks that we get, right?
Yeah, I prefer the snacks. I mean, I'm not a big catering guy. We're not throwing cargo or bags or something on board where we got to, you know, work out and, you know.
Well, you use M&M's calories and sugary sweets for energy.
Yeah, it keeps me awake. You know, it's caffeine, sugar, you know. It's a very unhealthy lifestyle, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, this last trip that we did, we started in Shenzhen. So, I mean, I've been to a lot of different cities in China, you know, Guangzhou, Shanghai, Jinan, Xi'an, Harbin, Wuhan, Shanghai, you know, I mean, I've been to like most of them. And on this last one, we got into Shenzhen and our handlers, which we're pretty good friends with, they invited us out to dinner and they said, what do you want? And I, of course, I called Bob's room and I'm like, hey, you know, Victor and Sam want to take us to dinner. Where do you want to go? He was like, no Chinese food.
and no sushi.
I disregarded that second part. And Victor wanted to take us to this Japanese place. He's like, it's a sushi place. And Bob's like, well, they'll have beef. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. They'll have, you know, something cooked.
So we went to this sushi place and like, you know, China's like, they're big into like the offal, like the eyeballs and rib cages and like the stuff that like we don't like to see as Westerners, right? And I'm like, how's that going to go over with sushi? He's like, oh, it's a traditional Japanese sushi place. And you know, the reality is, you know, it was. I mean, walking in, it looked like a high-end place that we go to in
It
know,
was
in
a
Japan.
Nice high-end place, that's for sure. It was.
Yeah, it's called Sushi
nice.
Man. So we go in. And, you know, at first,
it's got uni.
You know, it's like the normal stuff. There's the uni, like the sea urchin roe.
Which, yeah, I'd never seen that before, actually.
Like regular, you know, it was like an omakase. So you didn't order. Like they just gave you stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, I mean, like the first few dishes that came out, they were good. They were normal.
That's, you know, some kind of white fish that's seared.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is that under it? Was that rice or was that the uni eggs or whatever?
I think it was like a cod, I think. But like there was some bizarre stuff that came out, right? Like that's the bottom lines. But like we ended up with like one of those, like, you know, the fish with the lamp on the top from the deep sea. They had one of those, the liver of one of those. I didn't photograph it. It was weird. And then we got this thing. Check out this. It looks like a brain.
Cod balls.
All right. I'm just going to pause it right there. Like they tried to explain.
That's what they said it was. They said it was cod reproductive system.
Yeah, like the reproductive system of a cod. We don't know if it was male or female. I mean, it looked like a brain.
Male sex organ of a cod.
Yeah.
So, like, for the really radio audience.
Did you really eat it?
Dude, I not only ate mine, I also ate yours. Because I just didn't want to, like, I felt bad. Like, this is like a delicacy, man. It was like, it looked and felt like a brain. It was white and gelatinous. Well, here, let's watch Bob eat it real quick.
It tastes good. It's just got a very gelatinous texture.
Like I would believe Steve.
It has a very good flavor. But don't mix it all up because then a bunch of this white stuff comes out, and I think it might be.
I'm gonna stop it right there.
Yeah. Thanks for the play by play as I'm eating it.
So I mean, the reality is that Bob took like the tiniest of fragments and put like a piece of wasabi, like 10 times the size up on top of it. And, Yeah. So anyway, so we ended up, we ate there. It was okay. I was stuffed because I ate all of my food plus like 75% of Bob's food.
Yeah. I claim to be allergic to most of it. So, I feel bad. I mean, it was a very expensive place and and they took us to a nice place. I mean, just for the record, I was not feeling well that evening either. I had, some kind of, I don't know, the air was getting to my throat. I was just kind of,
oh yeah, you were a mess. You couldn't talk. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to show one more clip and then we're going to move on to the next topic. But like, I have a clip of the catering that they brought us. So we ended up getting catered with, your standard, like cold cut sandwiches and stuff like that. Plus we had our 7-Eleven, like kimchi, Pringles and all that stuff. But like we ended up sitting for a while before we departed and Bob was saying he was hungry. So I brought him some catering. The reason I'm bringing it up now is you can hear how sick you were. Like your voice was like horrific. Anyway, here's the clip.
I'm here to present you, Bob, with your Chinese catering.
What do we got here?
Is that bread? I thought it's bread.
It's bread.
Yeah. It looks like bread, right? It looks the same color as the bread.
Oh wait, that is meat. No, that's meat.
That's meat.
Yeah.
That's roast beef with an egg.
That fucking roast beef, dude.
Yeah, I don't know if it was really roast beef, but it was something.
There it is.
It's like a grayish. Like a, you'll see it if you tune in, right? It's like a grayish,
right there is a cat.
Brown.
I guess it has a picture on the package.
If spam was brown, that's what it looks like brown spam between two pieces of like brown bread.
Say yeah.
That's what it says on the packaging.
Oh yeah, my voice was terrible. God, I was losing it that whole flight.
I know.
Maybe.
You should eat it.
I don't know, man. Nowhere to even keep it cold.
That's why you should eat it now.
I'm not eating it now.
So, did you end up eating that thing or what?
No. I didn't eat anything that contained any meat or anything. I stuck with the kimchi potato chips, which are actually pretty darn good. I can recommend kimchi potato chips.
Yeah, kimchi potato chips are really, really, really good. All right. So anyway, long story short, we survived the trip by eating like Pringles and stuff like that. I might have heated up the beef entree, but I do not believe I ate more than one forkful of it.
But I knew Guam was coming in about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
And
I
knew what was coming and I was like going, I can't wait. I mean, I was in China for a week.
So yeah.
I was getting kind of sick of the same.
What did we get? So. Tell them.
The Golden Arches, baby. Mickey D's, man. And they brought us a lot of it. And
we did.
And it was, the fries were still warm. I mean, everything, it was good.
There's nothing like McDonald's when you're fresh out of a week in China. Like there's nothing like it. Seriously. Like I don't eat McDonald's at home ever. I don't even remember the last time I ate McDonald's, probably when I was in a sim somewhere or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I rarely do either. I'm usually with you if I ever eat McDonald's. I mean, it's usually us trying to like get something quick or it's the only place open or something weird.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Man, oh my God, it's like a delicacy when you're on a trip like this though, and you get into Guam and you're hungry and it's like, then you got to, you got another, 7 hours of flying to go. It's like, oh yes, the Golden Arches.
Yeah. So it was good, man. And that did us for the whole thing. So anyway, let's move on to side shtick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think there's going to be like a theme music to side shtick. Cue the theme music to Shot Side Shtick. All right, I'm gonna set my timer. We have 5 minutes. Let's see how this goes. We have 5 minutes to discuss. Hold on, 1 second. How do you timers? Here we go.
I can't wait to hear what you've came up with.
Okay, side shtick for this week is going to be starting. Okay. Is going to be aviation conspiracy theories. Okay. there are three widely circulated aviation conspiracy theories. I mean, they're all pretty asinine, and I'm going to lay them out here, and you and I are going to discuss the merits of each one and determine, we're each going to give our take as which is the most likely to potentially be true. Okay.
Yeah.
Number one, the jet fuel hoax. The conspiracy theory is that jet fuel does not exist, or at least no longer exists, because airplane wings are too thin to store all the jet fuel that is in them. And so it's all the fuel hoses, fuel trucks. That's all just for show. And airplanes operate on very sophisticated alien technology propulsion systems. But there's a conspiracy kept alive that we still use fuel. So that's number one, the jet fuel hoax. Two, chemtrails. People look up and they see contrails, like the, you know, wingtip vortices condensing engine exhaust and creating lines in the sky. The conspiracy theory is that chemtrails are chemicals being purposely sprayed over the population to control them. And then finally, we have the flat earth theory, pre-Christopher Columbus era myth that the world was flat. People still believe that somehow, and that it's not spherical. So let's break it down. Let's just eliminate flat earth right now.
Oh, God. Okay.
Cause like we already know it's not true. Cause we would have fallen off the edge, right?
Man, you're opening up a can of worms here. Have you seen some of my social media posts where I've talked about this? There are thousands. I get bombarded with the flat earthers who come to defend the flat earth theory. So
you know, we don't have time to get into it in detail, Bob. I'm going to cut you short here.
Yeah.
It's absurd. Okay. There's a million ways to like, it's just not flat. Okay. And if you believe that the earth is flat, you seek help. Seriously. Like all the evidence is right there in front of you, up to and including, you can watch a cockpit casual video called Full Circle, not Full Plane, but Full Circle, where we fly around the earth, starting in New Mexico, ending in New Mexico. I think it was Albuquerque or wherever the hell it was. So Roswell. So anyway, that one's done. I don't believe it.
Yeah. The earth is a sphere. I mean,
let's talk about jet fuel hoax.
Yeah. And another one. I don't even know where anybody even came up with this one. I mean, look, I wish that it was not a hoax.
Me too. We'd have so much more money if we could charge our customers for fuel and then use alien technology to fly.
Oh my God.
Dude, we'd be rich as hell.
We have a jet that we fly, and it costs a fortune to fly it because we put like real gas in it, real jet fuel. There's no technology. I mean,
yeah,
there wouldn't be engine manufacturer problems if there was.
Yes. No, I mean, it's asinine. And the whole thing, the wings are too thin. You know what? Go stand in a 747 wing route, because you can, unless you're like 7 feet tall or something. I don't know how big it is.
Climb into the wing. They have people climb into the wing to fix fuel pumps and various other components that are inside of there.
It's spread out over surface area. There's also a massive center tank. The massive center tanks hold way more than the wings. Anyway, we're down to a minute here. Okay. So in 30 seconds, let's talk about chemtrails. Here's the deal. The government, I mean, maybe they are poisoning us. Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. If there's one that's plausible, it's not plausible, but the only one of the three that could possibly exist is chemtrails.
Okay.
I mean, it's not blatant.
It's not a chemtrail. I mean, it's not a chemtrail. There is cloud seeding. There are cloud seeding operations, but what you see up there in those contrails is not cloud seeding. Those are airliners. And that contrail. Now, here's the issue that I wonder about in terms of this. I don't believe that there's chemicals coming out of it, but are all of those chemtrails, are all of those contrails spreading out and causing other environmental issues? Like it's filtering sunlight from coming in. Well, is that the government calling?
Nope, that is your 5 minutes are up. Okay, so we got to end it here. We got to end it here today. They're all fake, and you're an idiot if you believe any of them. But if one could potentially have a kernel of truth, if somebody wanted to add something to jet fuel that does combust, that does create contrails, I guess in theory they could do that and rain it down over the public. But I will say that we have nothing to do with it, and it happens at the refining level, but it doesn't happen, and it's insane to believe that it does. So anyway, that's side shtick for this week.
Whew. Wait, man, wait till the flat earthers come. I'm just, I'm waiting.
It's going to take practice, dude. Like 5 minutes ain't very long.
No, that's not at all. I mean, I could.
We're going to keep it under control. Yeah. And that's it. We can talk about it another time. maybe it'll be the next side shtick if you really want to get into it.
Yeah, we can bring a flat earther on. No, I don't even want just. All right.
No, we should bring a flat earther on. That would be hilarious. Let's find a flat earther so we can make ourselves feel really smart.
I don't want to bring somebody on and just make fun of them.
Main segment today. Okay. The main segment today is, and we're running a little long, you know what? So be it. It's going to be a little longer than the normal episodes, I guess, or maybe they'll all be long. The main segment today, once we're going to deep dive into the ferry business. So, after a second here, we're just going to deep dive into what it is that we do. So the main segment today that we're going to do a deep dive on the aircraft ferry industry. People have a lot of questions as to what we do, and we hear them all the time. And so let's do our best to concisely answer what we do. Like, what do we what is our business? What is the ferry business? So first of all, the one that I get most often is, why do airlines not move their own airplanes?
Right.
Do you want to tackle that first?
Well, our main customers are not the airlines, for one thing. You know, most of the airplanes in the world are leased. So they're actually owned by large leasing companies, great big finance companies, banks own most of the airplanes and lease them to airlines. So those leases are for a defined period, just like when you would lease a car. At the end of that lease, somebody has to get that asset for the leasing company and move it from point A to point B, or, you know, do whatever they need done contractual wise with that.
Right. And that's, and so the lessors, I mean, the fastest, most concise and accurate answer is, our clients are generally not the airlines. They are the lessor, the people that own the airplane and lease them out to the airlines. I think it's like 70% to 80% of the world fleet is leased now. So we're dealing with these airplanes when they're in transition. So even if the client is our customer, they may not have that airplane on their op spec yet. So it's still kind of in transit. It's not, you know, an airline has to operate under very, very restrictive rules in all cases, right? And so before that airplane is officially onboarded with their maintenance program, with, you know, their manuals, with their crews, like, before that, their, you know, civil aviation authority oversight person signs off on the airplane being at that airline, it still exists in this limbo. And so that's when we have the airplanes most of the time. Like, we're moving the airplanes when they're in limbo. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it is the airline that's our client, but most of the time it's not.
Yeah. It's maybe 10% of the time it's the airline. I mean, it's a very low number.
Yeah, we work for like FlySaf Air is an airline, LATAM is an airline. We've done some Avianca work.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a handful of airlines out there that we work for.
Yeah, we're more of a technical company than a flight operations of sorts. I mean, we deal on the technical side of aviation, more so than the flight operations. So people see us, you know, as like the equivalent of airline pilots. But we're more associated, I think, on the technical side of aviation.
Yeah. I feel like we relate better, like on a personal level, to like maintenance reps, like mechanics, like, I don't know. That's who we deal with. I mean, our pilots are our guys. And then most of the people that are we don't interface with the suits per se at the lessors and at the airlines. The people that contract us, the people that we deal with minute by minute, day by day, you know, in our course of business, are the technical managers. So people that started out their careers as mechanics, worked their way up into maintenance management, and then they kind of oversee fleet transitions. So like, we're like the blue collar side of things.
We rarely even deal with the pilots at an airline. I mean,
no,
I can't think of the last time I talked to a director of operations or chief pilot or anybody.
Yeah.
You know, on that side of things.
It's happened, and we've helped stand up a couple of startups. Like, so then we've interfaced with them a little bit more, but yeah, like the pilots that we interface with are our contractors, you know, mainly that's like, we're like kind of part of this technical team that takes care of the continuing airworthiness, then ultimately the movement, like the actual ferry flight or the test flight itself is like tip of the spear. It's just like one little part of a symphony of different tasks that are taking place when an airplane is being onboarded to an airline or taken off the property of an airline. So we come in, and when the rubber meets the road, it's me and you, or, you know, us on a, with contractors flying a trip.
Yeah.
It's like the culmination of a long process.
A long process with hundreds and hundreds of items that have to be accomplished before that part ever happens.
Now we do have some airline clients, LATAM being a big one, and we've had others over the years, and they still come and go. And most of the time when we're doing something for an airline, it's because or JetSmart down in Chile, yeah, as well. Like, we're doing new Airbus deliveries for them. And well, why? Their own pilots can do it. But in a lot of cases, like long haul, especially when you're dealing with narrow body aircraft, right? Like long haul over oceanic, multi-country operations, it's a different game. And so while any pilot can do it with a little bit of training and a little bit of guidance, this is all we do. Right. And it's like, it's just a very different discipline. So we're very efficient. You know, we have great relationships with handlers and, you know, getting permits done and all that stuff. I mean, there's so much that goes into each trip, on the planning side, on with vendors, with invoicing. Airlines always have very specific vendors they use. They have onboarding processes for their vendors.
Or scheduled airlines, right? They're scheduled and they have defined things at certain destinations and routes. This route, we're going to do this, this, and this. They got that process. But when it becomes like an unscheduled type operation, that's kind of where they fall apart. I mean, that's not what they're designed to do. So they kind of go like, well, we don't know, you know, we've been flying in South America. We've never flown in Europe or across the Atlantic Ocean. We don't know what we're, you know, this is kind of out of our lane.
How do you get an overflight slot, a departure slot?
Yeah.
A departure
and then the pilots are thinking about how they're trained. It's like, okay, well, they got ETOPS rules and all of these things that you have to worry about at an airline that don't apply to a ferry operation. And so it's kind of hard to get sometimes that airline mentality out of the crews that are flying. And so we make it, we have the processes in, you know, all over the world in this unscheduled environment that we have it, you know, down to a science. It's very easy for us, and it's very easy for an airline to just hire us to just go do it. It's all seamless, and not, you know, there's no delays, and everything goes good.
Yeah, people see us on social and they think that it's just us doing everything. And I mean, look, we own the company. We do a lot. Like, we are sometimes the janitors and the accountants, and like, you know, we're everything to some degree. But we have a team. Yeah. We have a really proficient, skilled team that has been doing this with us for decades. And we have two dispatchers, one in Calgary, you know, one in Malé in the Maldives, covering 24-hour shifts total, you know, day in and day out, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, dispatching our flights, planning our flights. We have an ops manager that's contacting the handlers and setting up the fuel agreements. And, you know, we have a travel agent that sets up all of our crew travel. And we have an accountant that handles all the, I mean, each trip might have between 50 and 150 invoices for services that we procure throughout the process of ferrying an airplane.
Yeah. And then project managers, admin people. It's, I don't know, what do we got? Like 12?
Right now we have 12. There are times we ramp it up a little bigger. And then, you know, we have what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 full-time pilots. I would say probably about another 6 or 7 part-time pilots. And then, you know, 40, 50 contract pilots that are not just guys that we call because they have a type rating. They're people that we've worked with before, people that we bring in as a third at first, kind of see how our operation goes, assess their personality. Not anybody can do this. So there's a formula.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be a PIC on one of our flights, you know, number one, you need to have a lot of experience. You know, we're moving stuff that has problems sometimes. MEL'd items, you know, these are technically not airworthy airplanes we're moving. They're flying under special flight permits. And you have to have a lot of common sense as a pilot flying these. You have to understand, like, based on the weather conditions, your route, all of these things, you know, what kind of maintenance issues you might be carrying and how that's going to affect something down the road. I mean, we want guys that can make things happen, but have enough common sense to, like, stop the operation before they're going to bend metal or, you know, hurt themselves or somebody.
Yeah, there are, you know, ferry flying is very unique, okay? And there's a lot of things that make it unique. One of those things is, yes, we have a support system. We have ground-based dispatch. We maintain contact via SATCOM text message and voice calls sometimes, you know. But we don't almost never have CPDLC working in the airplanes. You know, we don't always have HF. We can't always fly RBSM. We very rarely have a database, so we have to, you know, use the MMEL deferral for that and carry nav pubs through JEPFD. We maintain this extremely expensive subscription for worldwide coverage of all the navigation charts, approach charts, departures, arrivals, so on and so forth. And every time we fly an airplane with no database, which is most of the time, or at least an expired database, which is most of the time, we have to cross-reference every fix with current data to make sure everyone is in there. If there's a change, we have to build the new fix manually. Sometimes we have to build the whole route manually. So, like, that's very different. It, you know, it takes a long time to get comfortable doing that every leg. The days are long, the hours are long. You know, you deal with meters in China, and, you know, we used to deal with it in Russia. You know, it's
And the catering sucks.
And the catering sucks, and the days are long, and, like, you got to kind of be a self-starter. Honestly, non-sked pilots are the best ones. Like, coming out of Kalita, Tradewinds, Atlas.
Hands down. It's difficult for a guy that's been flying his whole career at a scheduled airline to come in, jump into this. I mean, there's some people that do great. I mean, there's definitely exceptions to that, but I'd say a majority have kind of a difficult time, but many adapt to it.
So, you know. So one of the biggest unique features of being a ferry pilot, and that, you know, obviously some of our contractors only have one or two types, but, like, being, like, a ferry pilot as a career, us, right? You have to maintain multiple type ratings, and you have to be current and qualified and proficient on a variety of different type ratings. And, you know, people are always like, well, how do you go from Boeing to Airbus? How do you go from 737 to 777 to A340 to, you know, -8? And there's not really an answer to that other than it just takes time to kind of understand how to do it. Like, there's a process, like a review process before I do any flight. If I haven't flown a plane for a long time, I'll try to pair myself with somebody that's more current in the airplane whenever possible, including, like, retired guys. Like, you and I fly the 787.
Yeah.
But, like, we have under 500 hours in the 787.
Right.
So, you know, what do? Well, we go out and hire an Air Canada retired pilot to go fly with us, or a, you know, a United retired pilot to go fly with us to get us back into the mentality where we're, because the Dreamliner is different than anything else.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. It's, that one's one of the more difficult ones to, to not have flown for a while and then just go jump in. But yeah, it's great flying. I love flying with the older retired guys anyway. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm getting up there, but you know, I mean, it's one thing I always did enjoy about, you know, airline flying, you know, when I was young, I loved flying with these old guys that had these great stories and, just this unbelievable experience that you learn from. And I still love that dynamic to this day.
Unless they question your procedures, in which case, just put a bag over their head and put them in the bag.
You know, there's some guys that, you know, you come across and you're cut from the same cloth, man. It's like, okay, we're brothers in arms, man. We both get it, and you just click. And there's
and then there's.
Well, yeah, I don't want to keep it.
You can
positive.
Imagine. You can imagine.
We could have a whole segment on just that.
Let's talk about the competitive landscape of this business. There's a handful of companies out there that do what we do. We're nomadic, right? So people, you know, Nomadic Aviation Group is the name of our company. We fly under the call sign Nomadic. We're probably one of the more well-known. I think we're the busiest. At least we have been some years.
We're definitely one of the longest. I mean, we've been out there 26 years now.
Yeah. And it's a lot of that's based on the reputation that we have and, like, you know, the relationships that Bob and I have individually with, you know, with the clients, with the technical guys at the airlines and so forth. There are entrants all the time. There's a couple in Europe. There's one in China. There's a few people out there doing it, and there's a lot of retired guys that try to go at it. But the big barrier to entry is, what are you going to do when something goes wrong? Because it inevitably does. You have to have a deep bench. Like, you've got to have technical people on standby. You got to have MROs. You got to have ways to order parts. You got to be able to get yourself out of a pickle without, like, we can't break down in Hawaii and say, I'm going to go to the golf course. You figure it out. Like, our clients know. Yeah, our clients know that we're going to solve that problem, and it may cost them more, right? But it's not going to cost them as much as us walking away and letting them deal with it themselves.
Yeah.
So that's huge. And then just finances. I mean, we're small, you know, we're small business. We got 12 employees, and, you know, we have $120,000 a month in a hard fixed cost to nut to crack every single month. That's a lot. And, you know, we have customers on 15-day terms. We have customers on prepay. We have customers on 30-day terms. We have LATAM on 90-day terms.
90-day terms. So, yeah, we're fronting a lot of money. And
yeah, and you fill up a 767, that could be a $180,000 fuel bill.
Yeah. So not to mention the part where when the economy goes south, anything happens, people start declaring bankruptcy, and whatever you're owed, you're not going to get. I've never recovered any money in any bankruptcy, and I've been through two or three of them that have hit me for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I hit Nomadic for, I mean, we've gone through $500,000 in bankruptcy losses.
Yeah, you learn who to give terms to and who not to, you know, at the end of the day. I mean, I think that's one thing that I'd like to touch on in this podcast in the future is, like, the business angle of it. I mean, without giving away, like, the secrets and the keys to the castle, there's some interesting stuff. Like, I think, you know, the one thing I didn't start off thinking, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and figure out how to run a business. Like, I wanted to be a pilot, and then I found out about this business, and that's another story for another day. But ultimately, we've had to kind of build it as we go, like, take external processes and bring them in-house to save money or to, you know, to get a better product that isn't offered out there on the market. You know,
for sure.
Software to hardware to people.
And it's constantly changing. I mean, the world's changing fast. You know, in terms of technology, and, you know, and for us to keep up, you know, to be competitive in the world, we have to keep up with that technology and be on the forefront of it all.
Yeah. And, you know, real quick, before we finish up this segment, you know, people want to ask, they ask all the time, and I'm not going to get into the economics of it other than to say long haul ferries on narrow bodies cost about $120,000. Long haul wide bodies are about $200,000, you know, domestics 30 to 60. Like, those are ballpark figures. If you want to talk about the economics of each trip, that's what we're charging our clients. Of course, a vast majority of that is stuff that we have to pay for from other vendors, fuel and so forth. We have, you know, we have fuel contracts, travel, you know, we're always flying business class. Well, we fly business class because you can't get off of a 18-hour flight in coach and then perform at a high level. And you can't finish up 24 hours of flying and sit in a coach seat on your way home. You physically would not be able to, your body would give out. Right. So, like,
you'll end up looking like me at 60. If
yeah, not like you ever flown coach. Come on. You are almost 60, man.
Huh? I know. This year I'll be 60.
God, you're
coming
old.
Up, man.
That means I'm turning 50 soon, but 49 will be this year. So anyway, let's close out the main segment today. Just know that we will return, especially if you have questions. You know, the next segment we're gonna do is the listener questions, and we'll do that in a second. But you know, we're gonna cover the ferry industry. Feel free to ask away. If I can answer it, I will, and same with Bob.
Yeah.
So all right. We'll take a break.
Sounds good.
And we're back. All right. So for listener questions this week, you know, again, if you have a question for Bob and I, whether it's about cockpit casual, the ferry industry, the airline industry, aircraft, anything, you name it, you ask it. If we like it, we're going to tackle two questions each every week, four total. And we would love it if you would submit your questions to pod@nomadic.aero. So pod@nomadic.aero. Submit it in audio, note, or video form, and we will play it on the pod, and then we will answer your question. And I really hope that you guys do it that way, because I don't want to just read it. I want to see you. We want to interact with you guys.
Yeah.
So what we did for this week, since nobody even knows that we have a podcast coming out as of this moment, and maybe we won't. Maybe this just will suck so bad we won't even do it. But anyway, what we've done is I've compiled two questions for Bob, and he's compiled two questions for me, and we're just going to ask. These are the most common questions that we get. For me, it's in the comments of the cockpit casual videos. For Bob, it's, you know, on social media. So I'll go first. Bob, what's with you and the M&Ms?
Oh, gosh. Well, as most of you know, I won't leave home without them, or I won't go airborne without them. That all started out, probably 15 plus years ago. I had an old ex-TWA captain that I used to fly with, Captain Al. And Captain Al became a great friend of mine. I mean, we went all over the world together, and we became best buddies. So anyway, I'd always stop at a convenience store and get my snacks. Well, there was one particular flight. We were taking a 737 to Afghanistan, to Kabul. And I was in a rush. I was like, oh, man, we're running late. We got to get going. And we're driving down the road. And he said, Bob, he goes, you got to stop. You got to stop at the convenience store here. I was like, we don't have time. He goes, I'm telling you, you got to stop. I'm like, why? What's up? He goes, you got to go get those M&Ms. I go, what are you talking about? He said, every time you buy those M&Ms, we have a great flight. There's no problem. He goes, but I notice every time you don't have them, we have mechanical problems, weather problems. It's a disaster. He goes, we're going to Afghanistan. You go buy those M&Ms right now. So
it's superstition. That's the answer.
Total superstition.
All right. M&Ms make the airplanes fly smoother. Perfect. Second one that I have for you, and we'll kind of keep it as quick as you can, but concise. Yeah. What is Kitty Hawk? I keep seeing it. People are asking me about it. This is a question I have because I am on it. I know essentially what it is. What is it? What's your involvement, and what's the master plan for it?
Yeah. So it's a social networking app that I created is kind of a combination of Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. I'm trying to create a a place with no hate, no politics, place for just aviation to come together and network and have fun. There's a lot of things coming down the pipe in terms of there'll be a big calendar that will have everything aviation wise available on a master calendar. A lot of different things that are going to be beyond just social media. But
what about job hunting, networking? Is that incorporated?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a place for companies to create a profile. There's a place for companies to advertise for jobs. We're building the links for the search so that it actually finds people through an AI layer. So we're getting into the AI side of things. It's getting very complicated and taking a lot of people to build out what we're trying to do. But
so I guess we will be able to recruit from there too.
Absolutely. So I'm trying to build it out. So if somebody, wants how we get just like a deluge of people that want to come fly here, I want to just be able to tell them, hey, go to our Kitty Hawk page and there's a database there. You can put all of your information there. We could find you through that database. So we would be able to do that. Any other company would be able to do that. So download the app. It's going to be available as a website as well here very soon, but, download Kitty Hawk. You can find it on the app stores and create a profile. It's a great way for you to network. If you're looking for a job, if you're your company that's got, services or products, it's a great way to, advertise your stuff there to a very defined aviation ecosystem.
Awesome. Very cool, man. I'm looking forward to learning more about it. Everything that Bob and I do is the same. See, Bob does some of his own stuff. I do some of my own stuff, but for the most part, we're married.
Yeah. Very true.
The most heterosexual kind of way. Not that there's anything wrong with it otherwise. But, our wives might have an issue with it.
They probably wouldn't care.
All right. Probably not. Can you?
So
you got questions for me?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the common questions is about your music. You're very musically inclined. I mean, you have the jazz and all of this stuff incorporated into Cockpit Casual, and people hear you talking about copyrights and things like that. Can you go into that?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, if you haven't noticed, Cockpit Casual is music forward. I am a fan of music and I love music. It's been a huge part of my life. I used to play music when I was younger. I'm a drummer by trade. I play a little guitar, play a little piano. I've taken years of music theory. I love all styles, pretty much all styles of music. I mean, I like jazz. I like country. I like rock. I like rap. I mean, you name it. There is almost, I'm not a huge fan of opera, but I love classical. I mean, I just love music. And so one of the things, when I set out to start making Cockpit Casual, there were two hurdles to clear. One, I wanted there to be atmospheric music behind it. And two, I didn't know how to deal with music licensing. So my biological father is a jazz musician. He's turning 79 this year, but he still plays Philly jazz scene. Like he's kind of a local legend guitar player. I have access to just libraries of his music over the years from the 70s all the way through like stuff we recorded last week. So he's into like this really like avant-garde, like out there spacey jazz. And he's got a group with some rotating players called Symbiosis. And Symbiosis forms about, I would say, between 30 and 70% of the soundtrack to most of the videos. We record it at a studio called Elm Street Studios in Conshohocken, PA. It's about an hour from me. We get the guys out there. We make a day of it. Actually, you came out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was able to go out there and watch it happen one time. It was awesome.
Yeah,
I absolutely loved it.
We're going to have my dad on the pod at some point.
Yeah.
He would love to do
it. He's such a cool dude, man. I mean, when you think jazz musician, this dude has lived the life of exactly that. He's the real deal, man.
and he's a purist. I mean, he's just like jazz, jazz, jazz all day long. But so, yeah, so a lot of that stuff, the rest of the music that I use, you'll find there's different styles that I use kind of depending. I try to go location specific or just mood specific. I download those off of like licensing sites. I spend hours just listening to music at night and saying, I like this track, I'm going to use it. And I buy the license and I save the track and I use it. Not all of them have like the artist name and info. Sometimes if they do, I'll put it up in the credits. If not, I'll just put, you know, where I licensed it through. Something new that I've started doing in the last series is I started creating my own stems and my own lead-ins. So there are a couple of examples of that. I actually write, this is my workstation here. I mean, I have a MIDI keyboard here. I have Logic Pro. I have a Roland V drum kit in my basement, which is, I've got wires through the floor so I can play drums over it. So like I've actually been doing like generally 1 minute to like minute and a half segments.
So you've really been playing. I didn't know if
I'm
you
playing
were,
the music.
I knew you were making these stems, but I didn't know if you were using AI or something to just do it. Like,
no, I'm doing
that
it, man.
Awesome. But it takes, I didn't know that.
So like, I can't do it in a take, right? Like I'll record like a piano track 10 times and then I'll go in and I'll clean it up on Logic. Like I can like remove notes and put notes back in or replay a bar. Like, but I have enough chops. I have enough music theory where I can, I can listen to something and I can replay it on the keyboard. And with the drums, I can actually go down and play the drums, which I do on occasion. Yeah. Like here's one example. Like here, I'm just going to play it real quick. The last Cockpit Casual, there's a scene where I use a beautiful Symbiosis track, as we fly over the Saudi desert after we took off out of Muscat.
Oh yeah.
And it's, There was a track that I wanted to use on this scene, but I didn't know how to transition to it. And I looked and I couldn't find any way to transition to it. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna have to make my own transition. So this, the first, I'm not gonna play the whole thing, but like the beginning segment here is me.
Liver.
So like, we're not talking about like masterful playing, right? Like this is... This is just like,
are you watching the scene as you're playing?
No. I watch it a bunch and then I get an idea in my head and then I just try to do it.
Okay.
But I had to listen to what key the transition is going to occur in and I had to end on that key, right? So it transitions. I'll show you the transition in a sec. And by the way, if you have YouTube, you'll be able to see this scene. So we're taking off. We're rolling down the runway in Muscat and we're going to depart to the south, so we'll make a left turn out to the south.
You want rotate
D2. You can see Pat and I in the cockpit. We're rotating. Come out. It's very simplistic music, right? But it's just, it's an atmosphere, it's a feel. Yeah. It's a little hi-hat in the background, like conveying like a sense of like continuity and like movement. Right, this is all still me here. Come out over the city, we start to make a turn. And then after this radio transmission, it starts to transition into Symbiosis. And like, I'll start fading the background out. Let me just move it ahead a little bit. I'll start fading the background out. And as soon as you hear the trumpets, we're almost 100% Symbiosis.
Yeah.
And now this is Symbiosis. 1 and 2 5 good is that 4 problems. So that's the answer to your question.
Okay, well that's cool. I didn't know that because you know, I mean, when I was in the studio and watching Symbiosis do it, you had a monitor there and you were showing them scenes and they were playing that, you know, they were improvising as they're watching this scene. It was like a really cool process of what they were doing as all together. They were weaving, you know, this music together as they're watching this scene. And it's just like all coming together. So I was wondering, I assumed that that's how like your last Cockpit Casual went. You know, I didn't realize that you were putting it, you know, adding stuff in there. That's very cool.
So I'll play a clip for them to set the mood. And sometimes I'll just play it on loop in front of them so that they can glance up. I'm not a musician on that level. Like, I'm on like a very, very basic level musician. And for me, I can kind of feel what I want to do, but I can't like execute in real time. But these guys, man, they are like geniuses musically.
Yeah.
And they can look at a scene and they can translate the mood from that scene with their instruments. Like John Swanna plays the Evie. It's like an electronic valve instrument. The dude is a master. He had one in the 80s. Like, he was on the first MIDI wind instruments. My dad plays keyboards and he plays guitars. Percussionist has got a whole room of percussion stuff. Bob Meshi plays, you know, the actual trumpet, muted, a flugelhorn. Swanna also has a valve trombone. So, like, I mean, they do some awesome stuff.
Yeah, it was cool watching them. I mean, they were even arguing about, you know, different things, or you need to pull up this, and they're like going back and forth. It's like a whole big process, man.
It's awesome. And they're in separate rooms because it's a studio where like you get a couple guys in one room, but the drummer's like locked in a corner so it doesn't get picked up on the mics elsewhere. And Swanna's in there because Evie is silent, right?
Yeah.
So like he's in a room with this silent Evie. Looks like he's like in a silent room where you hear his breath, but if you walk into this mixing studio, like you hear what he's doing.
So, as everybody can see, Steve and I will talk about music for hours. So if you can imagine us being in the cockpit, we will talk about this stuff and go on and on. I mean, I love music too. I mean, I've got an amp sitting back here. I mean, I love guitars and I've played for a long time. So we have this in common, you know, so we can talk for hours, you know. Gosh,
the cockpit casual music is polarizing. Most people love it at this point, but the only negative comments I ever get are just people can't get behind my music. But you know what? Yeah. To each his own. And it is what it is. I feel like it adds atmosphere. I love doing it. I'm not going to stop doing it. I do try to bring in some new stuff. Like there was a vocalist on the last one, a rock track that I just loved.
Yeah.
If any listeners are musicians and you want to contribute, reach out, pod at nomadic.aero and let me know. Cause you know what? If I like your stuff and it's usable, I'll use it. If I like your stuff and it's not usable, we'll play it on the pod. We'll close it out with it.
Yeah.
One more question, Bob.
Yeah. So you're showing, that last cockpit casual, those last few episodes have brought up some questions about where's Bob?
Always, where's Bob? Some guy was like, where's the other guy?
The other guy.
And then another person was like, great editing, Bob.
That's right. It was all me this time.
Look, I shoot cockpit casual from my perspective, so I'm not always on screen, more so in the last episode. But like, it's not about me. It's about my experience, right? And my experience is generally it's shot from my eyes. And so it looks at Bob more than it looks at me. And that's just my experience on these trips. But Bob and I don't fly together all the time. We fly together a lot. I mean, I would say at least half a dozen times a year, sometimes more.
Yeah.
But like, look, our company is like a matrix. It's like a complex jigsaw puzzle that we're always trying to plug in the right pieces. You know, where's a trip starting? Where's a trip ending? You know, who's cheaper to fly somewhere? Who can we pair together? Like, it just doesn't always work out where we fly together. So sometimes Bob flies with Grant or Pat, or I fly with Pat Lewis or Pat Rower or Wes or Mike Holiday, or like, you know, we split up. So Bob wasn't on that trip. I think you were on an A330 out of Dresden.
Yeah, I was on the A330 when you were doing that one.
Yeah. So that's where Bob was. He wasn't there. He will be on the next one. I don't know what the next episode is going to be. I've got a few to choose from.
Yeah.
And we went to Tashkent, Uzbekistan recently. I got a lot of great footage there.
That was a cool one. You know, part of the other problem is we do have some clients that don't want their airplanes like filmed.
Or at least there's a statute of limitations. Like they're like, you can use it, but after a year has passed, all of our contracts have a provision for them to either accept social media or decline it. And 50-50. You know, like we're not just going to go put, you know, if you're a prospective client, I'm not going to put your airplane on there if you don't want me to. But, you know, so we have different rules for each trip. All right. So that's it. Listen, this was fun. I think we went a little long. But it's the first one, so it's just going
to
be long.
Well, cool. I'm interested to see what kind of feedback we get. As you said before, it's only going to get better. I mean, you know, this feels a little bit awkward kind of initially. I love doing it. I could sit here and talk about, you know, what we do in airplanes and aviation. I mean, literally all day, and music, and I go on and on.
Yeah. Bob, this was fun. Listen, send your questions. Don't delay. pod@nomadic.aero. Send it via video or audio. Tune in next week. I'd love to tease who the next episode is going to be about, but I haven't gotten that far yet. So wait and see. It'll be a good one.
Yep. Look forward to seeing y'all next week.
All right. Bye-bye.